Another day of serving the magic of cinema to the wasteland. Fuck my life. The hell? Oh shit, War Boys. Chad, activate perimeter defenses!
Affirmative.
Behold! His Excellence! Immortan Hoof!
Holy shit, it's really him. Jesus, look at those glutes!
Birioman, hear me. I, the all-powerful and super-jacked Immortan Hoof, seek an audience with you to bargain. Word of your deeds has reached me at Citadel. I congratulate you. No one has been able to penetrate the fortress of the ancient video sanctum before now. Truly, you must possess great physical prowess and technical skill.
Affirmative.
Yes. That is affirmative. I am highly technical. I am a technical master of the technical arts.
I propose a trade. I offer fresh water, fruit, and vegetables in exchange for entertainment. For my appetite is vast, and my collection of Saturday morning cartoons on VHS are beginning to wear.
Well, how do I know you won't just kill me and peel off my face right after I let you in? I've heard the stories. At best, I'll be made somebody's blood bag.
I give you my word you will remain unmolested, and your face not peeled off. For I am a lover of the cinema as much as you. But more importantly, I also offer this.
Is that what I think it is? Is that Taco Bell?
Yes! You will no longer want for cheesy bean spread and 35% grade D beef.
Chad! Deactivate perimeter defenses! Mr. Hoof, Immortan Hoof, welcome to Apocalypse Video.
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movie-less wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
Immortan Hoof, what can I interest you in? We have a large variety of film, 90s sitcoms, Saturday morning cartoons, and judging by your attire, I might be able to scrounge up a non-destroyed copy of BDSM from our adult film selection.
Please.
Don't let the assless chaps fool you. While I do enjoy setting the fashion trends of the wasteland, my sexual proclivities reach far beyond the realm of mortal man. However, your cartoon collection does interest me, specifically those dealing with superhumans, for I myself am more than human.
Okay, superhumans and cartoons. You know, I think I may just have the thing you're looking for. Chad, search Superman 1940s Max Fleischer.
Ah, Superman. I am familiar with this character. I have a copy of Superman 3 on Betamax. It is the prize jewel of my collection.
I think I smell a new series. Chad, initiate playback.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings in a single bound, this amazing stranger from the planet Krypton, the Man of Steel, Superman! Possessing remarkable physical strength, Superman fights a never-ending battle for truth and justice, disguised as a mild-mannered newspaper reporter, Clark Kent.
All right, well, that was Superman, or a.k.a. the Mad Scientist, the first of the Max Fleischer cartoons, and what I guess will be kind of an ongoing series here, an ongoing broadcast for the Superman cartoons of the early 40s. And if you're tuning in here, I'm joined by the Lord of the Wasteland himself, the Ayatollah of Rock and Rolla, Immortan Hoof.
Behold!
Oh, Jesus. Okay, Mr. Hoof, like, okay, so I appreciate that you're a ruler of the wasteland and so forth, but it's just, you know, it's just you and me in the store here. There's no one else in here. Ryan and Mike are gone, you know, traversing the wasteland. They were looking for, actually, they're actually looking for fresh water, so it's actually, so even if they fail, it's good that we've come to this agreement for water and food and whatnot, so they're not going to come back empty-handed necessarily, but... I feel like after watching the Superman cartoon, we're both comfortable with each other now. You can drop the whole mighty act.
So you're saying I can just talk normal?
There you go. You see, normal, right? Like normal people talk. You know, I realize that you got a reputation to maintain and you're lord of people. And I've heard some actually crooked shit about what you do over in Citadel or whatever the hell you call it. But, you know, it's just us two guys talking about movies and whatnot in the store. You can just
no one's going to hear this.
Well, this is literally broadcasting out to the wasteland, but on the other hand, I don't know how many people actually listen to this. I mean, I know we're probably broadcasting to, like, people in bunkers who may still be alive, who may just be skeletons. I don't know who's actually listening to this out there. So, you might be okay.
Okay.
The few people who have, like, old radios and shit like that might be hearing this. We tell everyone out there, like, if you're listening, you know, come on out to Sector 2, check out cinema. It's a kind of our mission to, like, spread the word of cinema here, if you're unfamiliar, Mr. Hoof.
I see.
To the inhabitants of the wasteland. It's what we do here at Apocalypse Video. But anywho, let's get into the first of what will be a 17-part series on the Max Fleischer Superman cartoons. By all accounts, this is probably out of all of animation, I'm literally all of animation, the history of animation, when you look at pivotal moments, like landmark cartoons, what have you, this has got to be up there. I mean, looking at the information that Chad printed out from the IMDb archives, this is like one of the big, like, it's like up there with Walt Disney, I feel, as far as like things that it inspired. The Max Fleischer Superman, the original, has got to be one of the big ones.
Yeah, those first five episodes or so, you can see even today the footprints that it left on animation, or fingerprints it left on animation going forward. A lot of the camera angles and animation techniques that they used are really remarkable and still hold up and still are very impressive even now.
Like, especially, like, I mean... In a cartoon in the 40s, I mean, I don't imagine that you really saw this type of shit employed in cartoons at that era. Like, it was Walt Disney, and that was more or less it. There were other animation studios, like I think Looney Tunes and Warner Brothers was around at this time, if I'm not mistaken, maybe not. But I think it was like with Bugs Bunny and stuff. Yeah, it was. Dave and Max Fleischer, like they were at the time, they were the ones behind the Popeye series and they'd done Gulliver's Travels, which was big. And it's interesting, like when Paramount approached them, they actually didn't want to do this series. They're like, no, we got too much shit going on right now. It's, you know, it's, we don't want to be stretched too thin. So what we'll do is we'll make a deal or a proposal to Paramount that is so ridiculous that they'll have to reject it, and then we can go back to doing what we were doing, and we won't have to say outright, no, we don't want to do it. So they're like, it'll take $100,000 for each episode, which by today's standards is over $1 million per like 8 minutes short. And surprisingly, Paramount's like, okay, well, we can work with that. How about $50,000? And they're like, okay, yeah, that's cool. Shit. So they ended up doing it. And that's a reason why I think, kind of accidentally, that the episodes still hold up. Because for the time, these were like state-of-the-art, you know, big-budget cartoons. And it shows, in the fluidity of the movement. You know, there are like several, and you mentioned the angles and whatnot in the visual style. It still holds up today, and I think a lot has to do with the big budget of this. Like, it was something that maintained throughout the 17 run, short, the short run of this series, like from 41 to 43, I believe. They were all really high budgeted shows, and I think the money is on screen. Even in the lesser shorts, they still look good.
Well, even the first episode I think is the most impressive, and I think that episode specifically has a lot of moments in it that can even be kind of looked at as cinematic. Specifically with the use of camera angles and deep space and things like that, because really when you think about the cartoons that maybe came before or around the same time, like you mentioned Popeye and Looney Tunes, a lot of those cartoons are kind of focused
cartoony.
Not just cartoony, but are limited to a very flat space. So it's basically kind of like South Park is the most extreme example of flat space. Yeah. But with this cartoon, specifically the first episode, when you get a shot of the architecture of the villain's lair, and inside with the villain's lair specifically, you get this layered environment that is really just remarkable. You know, I've recently been watching a lot of silent films too, and it's just going back to the very beginning of cinema, really, and this is a piece of that, I think, because it really incorporated a lot of these advanced artistic ideas into a cartoon, really. I mean, at the end of the day, it is a cartoon for kids, and so to have these things implemented in this cartoon is really, it's something very special.
Well, I get the sense, like we said, the Dutch angles and stuff like that, I get the sense that these guys were had to have been taking from, like, foreign films and stuff like that. Like, I was getting vibes, maybe not Dr. Caligari, but like European films that employed those Dutch angles and weirdness.
Yeah, certainly that first episode specifically with the architecture, both sure. in and outside of the building is very expressionistic. And certainly Dr. Caligari is the first one that pops to my mind as well. And you really get these just awkward images that are really beautiful.
I gotta say, for someone who has said that they have like a Betamax copy of Superman 3 and Superman comics, like, I'm impressed that you are able to obtain like silent films and shit like that. Like, you are a true marauder of the wasteland. That you could track this shit down. Like, you are like the film like preservation champion of the wasteland, I gotta say.
Well, now that there's desert near and far as the eye can see, and mutated people walking around. The goals one can have in life are very limited. And so,
when you discover a heap of old silent films, like, that's pay dirt.
Yes, that's treasure.
Well, one thing, like, I kind of got the sense, like, you mentioned space. Like, I can't say as an authority, like, there wasn't a ton of, like, sci-fi shit before this. This is 1941. I'm trying to think of, like, sci-fi in, like, motion pictures in this time period. I'm like, the only one that comes to mind really is Metropolis. Like, in a big sense. Metropolis and maybe, like, Trip to the Moon. Like, I'm trying to think of sci-fi in, like, the 40s. Like, the only thing, it had to have existed, right?
Oh, certainly. I mean, but Trip to the Moon was much, much earlier. I mean, that was...
Yeah, yeah. Like 30 years earlier, right?
Yeah, that was about the end of the 1800s. But I think that really this was another perfect example of people who were not bound by limitations in their medium. Because something that, when you go back and watch silent films, and when you, I think when you watch this film and you compare it to what came after, there's a sense I get from watching these types of things of the limitations that are self-imposed by seeing prior incarnations through that medium. So for movies, you know, every movie you watch presents to you a possibility, but simultaneously some kind of limitation. And when you have the beginning of something like cartoons, there's an ability to push yourself beyond these boundaries because boundaries don't exist, really.
Yeah.
And specifically this first episode with the mad scientist, I think really is a good example of that type of a limitless potential, because they do all these really the story itself is very basic, but the everything else that's going on that is visual, really, which is what makes this episode so spectacular, is really not bound.
Yeah, I mean, the scale of it is pretty crazy. Like, I mean, the mad scientist uses, like, this giant, I forget what he calls it, some beam or ray, and, like, just the shots. Like, that you get, a lot of the shots are wide angles, like, you see the whole city, and then that shot of the building just, like, falling down and shit. Like, I really get a good sense of the scale and the size of Metropolis.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worth noting that this is, like, before the Max Fleischer cartoon, Superman never flew. There was a whole idea of leaps, you know, taller, or can leap higher than... Jesus Christ. We just heard it in the fucking intro. Can leap tall buildings in a single bound. Like that, he leapt in, like, high in the comics. Like, and evidently when the Fleischer started working on this, they're like, oof, him hopping across buildings and jumping kind of looks goofy, animated. Can we just have him fly? And DC's like, DC Comics is like, okay. So this is, it's worth noting that the Fleischer cartoons are the ones that introduced the idea of Superman just flying.
Yeah, but another thing too that they do, the first one, it's clear that he's
flying
yeah. Especially with there's a moment when the building is kind of bending and he pushes it backwards and then he grabs it and he's just clearly using flying powers, basically.
Yeah.
But like the episode after that, it's more in line with just really big jumping. Hops,
yeah.
Basically, which is kind of cool. And you see kind of it going back and forth as the in different episodes, yeah. Which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, it almost feels like, I almost wonder, like, if maybe the mad scientist wasn't the, well, actually, no, I think the mad scientist was the first one they did, because I was about to say, maybe they worked on the other ones first, had him jumping, and then came to the conclusion, we don't like the way that looks, this is seven fly. It's curious.
But, well, yeah. I think the first one really, when you really look at every single one, all 17, I guess, the first ones, they blew their load in the first one.
I got that sense. I think it did seem downhill, like, with the remainder.
Yeah, and that's not to discredit the next four or five, which I think are also pretty on par with the first one, but the first one really is just the absolute best one.
Yeah, I agree.
By leaps and bounds, or by a single leap and single bound.
Insert laugh track? to kind of touch back on what you were saying earlier, like as far as what this like inspired, space travel, like the look of space, superpowers and stuff like that, like his eye beams, like I'm trying to think, like, was there anything in that in a big medium that wasn't comics prior to this? You know what I mean? Like, I think you made a good point. Like, what's great about animation is that you're not really bound by anything. You can draw whatever you want. And with the techniques that they use in this and the fluid motion, it just makes it look all the much, so much better.
Mm-hmm. Something that you brought up before we recorded was them drawing over live action.
Like the rotoscoping.
Exactly. And it plays into the fluidity of Superman's movement and kind of how smooth it looks and how impressive it looks, especially when you compare it to, I think it was the 60s cartoon that you mentioned.
The Hanna-Barbera ones.
Yeah. And so when you compare the animation in those two, the one in the Fleischer cartoons is obviously more impressive. And just to go to that extent to basically capture real human movement in that way and incorporate it into a cartoon is awesome.
Yeah, it adds like I want to say a sense of realism to it. It makes it seem more tangible, like when the building's like collapsing and he grabs it and then he pushes and then he kind of like leans back for a second and then pushes outward again. It like you don't see that in a lot of cartoons, like even after this.
Well, that's the that moment where he kind of he it's it's visibly he's undergoing a visible physical struggle.
Yeah.
By you know having the building crash on him, exerting force and then pushing it back. That whole moment is really a really good example of basically why animation is so special and so unique. Because if you did that with practical effects, it would look too goofy.
Yeah.
And if you did it in animation, you have the ability to either do it just very wooden or stick man-y, like maybe the 60s would have done. Or in this case, this is the perfect opportunity to take mix fantastic with real.
Yeah.
And just have the perfect synthesis, which is what that moment is. It's a great moment.
Yeah. One other thing that this first episode does so well is set up so many Superman tropes that would follow. There's the whole idea of like faster than a speeding bullet, really tall buildings and think about blah blah blah. Just his look is good. One thing that I thought was interesting that they did in this first episode was it almost seemed like they were addressing some Disney stereotypes.
Mm.
Like the inclusion of the bird with the mad scientist, I'm like, that is straight up a Disney character. Like they do this a lot with pretty much the whole series of shorts. Like the musical cues are like synced with character movement. Like do 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 as they're walking down the stairs, and then as they're walking up, do 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 do. You know, and my favorite is when Superman he's getting blasted by the beam and he's flying up and pushing it back. The moment when he starts punching the beam, it's so crazy. Like to kind of discuss just the story and the episode in particular, to kind of like dig deeper in. That is maybe one of the most baffling things about it. It gets into like the more cartoony aspect of the cartoon, in that like he's punching the laser, like how does that work?
He's punching light, basically.
He's punching light, and oh, I love it too. It's just like it kind of gets into like the cartoony aspect of it, but I actually like it. It's kind of a cool visual, him flying up and just going
yeah.
And to touch back on the bird, like he's got like these crazy like yellow, green, and red eyes, like you know, like that, and like he seems to really take pleasure in killing. You know what I mean? Like that, like he literally. I think at one point, I may be wrong, but I think at one point the bird basically like rubs his wings together as if he's like like that. Like I kind of got the sense it almost felt like they were making a concession. Like Disney's popular. Again, this is just speculation. I'm not saying this is the case, but I got the sense that this felt like a Disney inclusion. Like, let's appeal to that crowd, maybe, or let's get like a Disney aspect and put it in here. Because you don't really see much like this bird character in the subsequent shorts.
Yeah, maybe. I think that this first episode had everything, basically.
I think that's what it was. Yeah,
it had the bird, it had the musical cues, it had every single thing from every single consecutive short that you see. Is every good thing,
yeah,
like every consecutive short is in this first episode.
Yeah.
And including some of the things like maybe the bird. And so yeah, it seems like they were incorporating things from all different aspects, especially because this is a kids' cartoon,
yeah,
for kids.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is something that ties into the intro where they kind of say, you know, faster than a speeding bullet. I really love that because it's one of the first examples of an intro, basically, to get the kid hyped up. Because, I mean, one of my favorites is Power Rangers, for those who don't know. But yeah, the intro for a kids' show is so imperative to getting a kid hyped up for what's to come. And I think like I can take myself back and think of what it would be like to see this, sit down and watch this on the TV and be like, oh, faster than a speeding bullet, faster than
or a movie theater whatever. In the 40s.
Yeah. So, I mean, to see that, I mean, that would be really, really, really exciting.
And I get, it was funny as we watched all these, in one sitting. And so we had to see the intro over and over again. It almost made me wish they had this back in the day when Netflix was a thing. You're probably not aware of it, but they had a skip intro button, and it almost got to a point where I was like, okay, because these episodes are only 8 minutes long, I'm seeing this intro a lot and within pretty close succession. So I'm kind of wanting to skip it, but you got to go back to the 40s. Like you got to imagine that intro is in front of everything, is to get you in. And it's there if you hadn't seen a previous short, or if you didn't know, you know what I mean? It's like Stan Lee used to say, like, every comic could be that person's first comic. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to give like a little moment of an intro to get them into the world, if just in case it's their first time.
Yeah, that tells you all you need to know about Superman, really. Yeah. For these shorts, you really don't. I mean, his backstory is almost secondary, really, to his abilities.
Yeah, and it's interesting. This rewrites his origin a little bit. The idea that Kents are not a thing in the Fleischer Superman cartoons. It's a passing motorist drove by and dropped him off in an overage. and what I love that voice, the 30s and 40s announcer voice. You know, like a passing motorist. I love that shit. But it's interesting that they do that, and it's obvious I feel like they did that in a way to like just streamline his origin tale, for because it's like they're doing 8-minute shorts. I feel like if they throw in the idea that Kent's, that's like backstory that they don't need for an 8-minute short.
It's 30 more seconds.
You cannot afford it. That's precious seconds. The episodes are costing so much fucking money. These are on par or more than Disney cartoons. They don't have time for that shit.
That 30 seconds is like $5,000.
Exactly. And this is the 1940s. Come on. one thing I want to touch back on real quick. I don't want this to be left behind. We talked about the bird. It's worth noting that I think by all accounts, that bird died in the explosion at the end.
Oh, I think... I think it escaped.
And no way.
And it ties into a future episode, so I won't.
Oh, I think I know where you're going with that. That'll be a much later episode.
Yeah, in this so series, but... I'll bring up my theory in that episode.
But yeah, it's funny. Like when Superman saves the day, he grabs Lois and grabs the mad scientist. He leaves the bird behind.
So I mean, this Superman, as according to Fleischer, hates birds.
Just doesn't give a shit. Or maybe he didn't like the Disney his Disney mm-hmm. jib. I don't know. Or kind of his Disney jib. Who knows? But oh, one other thing I want to mention, we kind of touched on the music briefly, the musical cues. Great music. Like until the movies came out with John Williams, like decades later, this to me is like really synonymous with Superman too. It's like, and it does the same thing that the Williams score does too. Like the musical score literally says Superman, like da 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 da. You know, you can hear the music literally just saying Superman. Ba, ba, da.
Well, great, it's not literally here. Saying.
Well, not literally. It's musically saying Superman. But a great music score in this. I really like it. Like this is around the time. This is. I guess like maybe almost 10 years after musical scores in movies actually kind of became a thing. Like up until, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the early 30s, like musical scores were more like musical accompaniments with a guy on an organ or some shit like that. Like it wasn't really, I don't think, until the early 30s. Like in fact, King Kong was one of the earliest movies to actually have like a score attached to the movie, you know, like in a big musical orchestral sense. So I think these Fleischer cartoons do a good job of incorporating like a big orchestra. And I think it really lends like a big epic feel to the cartoons.
Certainly.
Because if it was just like goofy, like do 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 like type music or something, it wouldn't sell. Mm-hmm. It just wouldn't be the same. But what's kind of, so there's a few little points, what the fuck moments you could call them, that I want to address with this episode. Inconsistencies. I don't know if you had any, but one I had was, it opens with the mad scientist. The Daily Planet gets like, mad scientist is blowing shit up. And Daily Planet gets a letter from him saying like, for all you who doubted me, blah, 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 you'll pay the price at midnight or whatever. What I find funny about this, somehow, first off, Lois Lane can evidently fly a plane in this. She knows how to fly a plane. And secondly, I guess she just knows where the mad scientist is hanging out. She flies directly to the beam. Well, actually, you know what it is? I guess it's not hard to figure out, because the beam, you can see where the beam's coming from, the top of this high mountain. So it's like, why don't the police just go there? It's like, we know where the beam's coming from.
There's only one giant ominous building here in Metropolis.
Right outside of Metropolis, we can see where the beam's coming from. It's not like the beam is moving. It's coming from a central location. It's not moving. Mm-hmm. So it begs the question, why don't the police go and arrest him or something?
Probable cause, David. They didn't have it yet.
What? He just blew up a bridge. I don't get it. Lois is the only one that's just like, oh, that laser was shooting from the giant evil mountain. I'm going to go fly up there because I can fly a plane. And what's funny, when she walks up, I forget what she says exactly, but she's like, hello, I'm looking for her, or something like that. Like, she doesn't, like, open the door thinking, like, the mad scientist is in here. I'm going to get him. It's almost like she goes there thinking, hey, have you guys seen the mad scientist? I'm looking for a mad scientist. The way that she talks when he opens up the door does not suggest that she was there looking for the mad scientist.
No.
Like, she didn't expect to find him, which is baffling to me. It just doesn't make sense. It's one of the what the fuck moments I had with this episode. I mean, granted, it doesn't ruin the episode at all. I take the 8-minute short for what it is. It's for kids. It's in the 40s. It doesn't hurt the episode at all for me, but if I'm just addressing it with a critical eye, it's like, huh? Like, what the fuck? I don't know. Was there anything that stood out to you? And this is kind of like, well, that was goofy.
No, not really.
I also like, so I mentioned him punching the laser. I thought that was funny. I also like the idea that Superman at the end, when he takes the mad scientist, he literally throws him in jail. He walks into a jail. He throws him in a jail cell, slams the door shut. I just love the idea. I like the idea of super, like, there's no, like, system. He doesn't take him to court. Just literally throws his ass in jail.
We see that in the live action movies too.
We do. He just drops him off and everyone's cool with it. Drops off Lex Luthor at the prison. He's just like, I got a bad guy for you, Warden. It's like, good job, Superman.
No criminal justice system needed.
No. That's why these criminals keep getting created. They're just like, this world is fucking crazy. There's no due process. Like, I have no rights. It's fucking crazy. Anywho, like, that's kind of all I had. I mean, again, there's not a ton to talk about as far as the episode itself, but the things that this episode, that this series and this episode in particular inspired are numerous. And for me, most importantly, Batman the Animated Series. Like, I think it's really evident that when that series came out, it was taking pretty much everything from this, from the Max Fleischer cartoons and style and the sensibility of it. Like, those, the Batman animated series is interesting because technically it's like, I think it takes place in what would be current day, but the style is like the 40s. The cars are like, look like 40s cars. The cops look like 40s cops, but there's like elements of like present day stuff. So I really like the tone they struck in those episodes in Batman the Animated Series.
Certainly. I think that when you look at the Batman animated series intro, specifically, they incorporate some of the same things that we discussed, like the expressionistic style and also the candid camera angles and things like that, which really add some kind of a, you know, gravitas to the image.
Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, if we don't really have a rating system on the Apocalypse Now. I don't know if you've heard any of our broadcasts, because it sounds like we're wrapping up on this first installment of the Max Fleischer Superman series. But I would definitely recommend this really to anyone. Like, regardless if you're a comic book fan or a Superman fan or a fan of animation, I think this is one of those things I'd recommend to somebody. Like, if I was building, if I was making like a syllabus or something like that for like an animation or a cinema class or whatever, like, I would put this in here. This is important, like, visually and what it inspired. And just the craft involved in making this. Like, this is, I would recommend this to literally anyone. I think it holds up.
You would recommend to a blind person?
Yes, because the music is great. The sound effects are great. I feel like they can understand what's going on.
What about a blind and deaf person?
And there are a lot of them in the wasteland. I don't know about that.
So maybe not literally everyone.
Maybe not literally everyone. I guess I should say anyone... This could fit anyone's tastes that has the ability to see and or hear things. I would recommend to those people.
I agree. This is an excellent piece of history, and it's wonderful.
Like, if it isn't already, this should be, or I guess I should say should have been, if it wasn't, like, this would be something I would recommend for inclusion in, like, the National Film Registry, you know? They used to have a thing that they would... basically just honoring, like, basically saying, like, officially, like, these are important works of art, essentially, like, in the medium of, like, film and whatnot. I think it's that important.
And yeah, good? I agree. The first episode really is, if you were going to watch any of these, I think the first episode is the one that's, I would say, maybe mandatory. And Definitely. This one really captures every single positive aspect that the series had to offer and did offer.
I agree. But we'll find out if the momentum maintains for this series, if it'll stay as good as its inaugural episode, the first one. Who knows?
And keep listening for the bird theory.
The bird theory. Yes, I can't wait to get to that. That, who knows? Maybe that bird comes back in an unexpected form. But anyway, I'm your host of Apocalypse Video, signing off on this broadcast. I'd like to thank you, Morten Hoof, for joining us and agreeing to sit down for this 17-part series.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's really big of you. You know, you have a lot going on, being a ruler of the wasteland and whatnot, and you know.
Well, as you know, cartoons and animation are very near and dear to my heart, so this is something that I'm willing to undergo.
It's basically your Achilles heel, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, let's not.
We don't want to broadcast that. Never mind.
Yeah, cut that. That'll be cut, right?
I'll edit that out. Yeah. Well, like you said, no one's hearing this because we don't want. You have a sense of what's the word I'm searching for? You have an imposing nature that you want to instill in people, and hearing them you talk in this manner might undercut that.
Listen, Dave, all I need is the next time I go to extort someone, they bust out an old copy of the Herculoids, and then I can't extort them.
You know what you're doing right now? You're basically giving the interview that that Superman gives in Superman the movie. It's like, well, see, my only weakness is cartoons and 80s horror movies. I kind of have an Achilles heel for cartoon. Anyway. But that's going to do it for this first installment of Apocalypse Video, the CryptoCast. This is David Snyder signing off from Sector 2. We'll be back with more Superman in The Mechanical Monsters.